All right, so listen, I want to do something a little bit different this week. I know, you know, this is our official Rabbi Nachman share. We normally do Likutei Halachos. It happens to be that today I just didn't have my Likutei Halachos with me. But as Hashkacha Pratis would have it, I usually never leave home without it. It's always good to have it with you. But Baruch Hashem, so I came across a beautiful idea by the Lubavitcher Rebbe. That's actually brought down, Rabbi Larry Ziffer gave me this set of sermon called Ma'or Sheba Torah, which essentially is a compilation of the various sichos that the Rebbe gave over the years, and kind of condensing it to somewhat more, you know, succinct, digestible pieces. So the Rebbe here has a piece, which I think is absolutely magnificent. And although it's you'll see as we go through it, it's a pashat idea, but it's exceptionally profound. So let's take a look. Parsha Shmos, so look by paragraph 8. So remember again, the pasuk begins, Ve'ele Shmos b'nei Yisra. So remember again, the Chumash, the parasha begins, and interesting, these are the names of the Jewish people. These are Ve'ele Shmos b'nei Yisra, Haboim Mitzrayim, who came to Egypt. So Tosad Yaakov, his sons, and Mamash goes through the entire Mishpacha. So the Rebbe says as follows, Bir HaKesher b'in HaParsha L'tochna. Paragraph 8. Parsha Shmos osekis b'shibudam shel b'nei Yisra b'galus Mitzrayim. The parsha ba, parsha Zvaira, maschil lehisnotzitz kvar or hageula, beemsaos haosos vahamofsim shasa kodish paruchu bimitrayim, vahamakos shehevi aleim. Ach parsha shmos osekes kol kula bekoshi hagalos vashipa. So let's remember again, the parshios of shmos vaira bo beshaloch represent the story everything from servitude to emancipation and freedom. Parsha Shmos itself is virtually fully focused on the Shibud, the beginning of Egyptian servitude, the full brunt of Egyptian servitude. I remember again, the truth is, remember, how does the Parsha end? The Parsha actually ends with an intensification of Egyptian servitude. Moshe Rabbeinu comes to deliver the first message of redemption, Shlach Ami V'yavduni, and Paro says, Tichbad Ha'avoda. If you have time to think about redemption, you've got too much time on your hands. You could produce more bricks. You could produce more pyramids. So the Rebbe just points out, Parsha Shmos is the story of servitude, is the story of slavery. So paragraph B, Ve'inyon zeh, Hagalos v'hashibut, kasher l'musag shem. So what's the underlying question of the Rebbe, which is the underlying question of many of the Mefarshim, which is why does the Torah need to begin this second book of the Torah with a listing of the names? These are the names of the Jews who came down to Egypt. Yaakov, Ishu, Beisobar, everybody came. Remember again, Parshas Vayichi. What happened in the Parshas Vayichi? What happens? Yaakov already blessed all of his sons. We went through everyone. We went through the genealogy. So why do you have to bring that up over here again? So the Rebbe says something amazing. Paragraph B. V'inyon zeh, hagalos v'hashibud. This concept of galus, of exile, servitude, kasher lemusag shem, is very much tied into the fundamental concept of a name. What does he mean? Paragraph C. Kedei levarzos, yesh lahaktim es hamavur b'taras hachasidus, shayachas bein shmo shel adam la'adam atzmo, kolel shnei kitzvos minugadim. So we'll say this is actually an incredible piece. The Rebbe says, a person has two fundamental relationships to his name, or better stated, that the relationship between a person and his name almost has two polar opposite parts. We have two different types of relationships with our names, and as we're going through those relationships, are opposite from one another. Watch this. Paragraph D. Mitzad echad, Hashem hu tchuna chitzonis bilvad. So people say, on one hand, what is a name? What is a name? It's an external form of identification. Hu eino megala davar al ofyav, va'al tchunosav shal ba'alav. A name doesn't necessarily represent anything deeper, right? So, my name is Bob. So we will say, what did Bob say about me? What does Bob say about me? That my parents named me Bob, right? It doesn't say anything. My name in no way goes ahead and captures any kind of essence. It's a description. V'rayi l'dover, shari yeshnam anoshim, paragraph E, rabim hanikraim b'shem zeh, v'im zeh, him yicholim lihios shonim zeh mizeh. Well, see, here's the proof. There are many people named Bob, right? Because this is a Lubavitcher piece. There are many people named Menachem Mendel, right? Many people named Menachem Mendel. Yet what? even though there are many people named Menachem Mendel, they all have different personalities. So what does that show you? What that shows you is your name does not necessarily correspond or relate to your individual or personalistic identity. It is a form by which you are identified, but it does not necessarily identify any of your internal qualities. And again, both say the raya to that is, you could have many people who all share the same name, yet are dramatically different people. I'm sure there are good Menachem Mendels, there are not so good Menachem Mendels, there are honest Menachem Mendels, and there are dishonest Menachem Mendels. There are, so you get the point. The idea of Osa is that on this level, my name has no real internal relationship to me. It's an identifier. It's a mark of identification. But again, has nothing to do with who and what I am. Paragraph F. On the other hand, Mitzad Sheni Hashem Kashrim Etzem Nafshel Shel Adam. Rabbi Osa, but there's a deeper dimension to a name. And on a deeper level, a name is reflective of the inner essence of a person. Kesher shu amok yoser mikochosav utchunosav agluyim. And I will say, a name sometimes highlights part of my essence that is so deep, that is so profound, that is so holy. Vochach lekach. I will say, listen to what the Rebbe's proof to this is. By the way, just as an aside, you know, there's the beautiful statement of the Arizal. The Ari HaKadosh brings down that when parents name a child, they're given a degree of Ruach HaKodesh. Because I will say, anyone who's ever had the privilege to name a child knows what's the most difficult part. What's the difficult part is, right, choosing the name. So for a little girl, it could be a couple hours after she's born. For a boy, it's at least 8 days after he's born. And suddenly you have to give this child the name that is going to be representative of their abilities, present and future, that is going to represent the full actualization of their sense of self, that represents their abilities, their ability to overcome their shortcomings, their strength, all these things, and you've known this kid for a week, right? Maybe that. And even then, they haven't really done anything all that dramatic except eat, sleep, and cry, right? And yet, I have to give a name that somehow captures the essence of this child. So the Ari HaKadosh says, parents are given a degree of Ruach HaKodesh. They're given a degree of prophecy in order to go ahead and give their child the right kind of name. So the Rebbe says, this is the second aspect of a name. The second aspect of a name is that it is reflective of my inner identity. I don't mean the Bab, right? I mean the Menachem Mendel, right? I mean the Avram, the Yitzchak, the Yaakov. Those names, when they're given to me, do reflect some aspect of my inner identity. And the Rebbe says, I'll tell you the proof to this. This is amazing. This is so interesting. Kasher korim la'adam bishmo hu pone miyadis b'choma hu so elakorilo. Well, see, here's the amazing part. When you're somewhere and someone calls your name, so what do you do? What do you do? You turn around. See, the Rebbe says, isn't it interesting, right? Isn't it interesting that when someone calls our name, we react? And about not only do I react, but if you think about this, if I'm walking in one direction, somebody calls me from behind, I turn my whole self towards that person. The Rebbe is describing, so, you know, I'll say, probably most of us have never thought about this, or say, yeah, somebody's calling me, I'm turning around. The Rebbe sees this on a deeper level. When someone calls my name, they're talking to something deep inside of me. They're talking to some deep wellspring of holiness inside of me. And so when I hear that, when I'm identified by that, I turn around and I answer. Because that name is not just an external identifier, but it somehow speaks to the deep reservoir of holiness and potential that I possess. He goes on. Yisera mizu. Kesha adam esalif is amazing. He says, even more intense than this. Kesha adam esalif. When a person faints, Rahmana Litzlan, Nitin la ora oso me alufuno, aide kriya bishmo. How do you try to wake up a person when they fainted? Right? Yankel, Menachem Mendel, right? Avram, right? You call their name. So we'll say, we don't think about this, but the Rebbe says, what's happening when you do that? You're talking to a person, not just their goof, you're talking to their neshama. You're trying to awaken not just their body, but you're trying to awaken them from within. Because the name represents my inner identity. The name represents who and what I am in my kishkas, in my soul, in my neshama. He goes on, Kevan shakriya b'shmo shel ha'adam, magia ad etzem nafsho. Because I will say, my name is not just my external identifying marker, but my name represents the totality of the strength I possess, the greatness I possess, the good I possess. So what I say, isn't this amazing? So the Rebbe says a name, one name, represents two polar opposite ideals. On one hand, what is a name? What is a name? Bob, Menachem Mendel, nothing more than an external identifier. Because I got to call you something. So whatever your name is, nothing more. There's no depth to it. Vaharaya, you could have 1,000 people named Menachem Mendel, 5,000 people named Bob. There's no depth to it. On the other hand, he says the deeper meaning of a name is what? Is that the name represents, or the name speaks to, who I am on my inside. My name captures my essence. My name highlights my greatness. My name tells me who and what I am, even though I don't yet know it. So watch this. The Rebbe says something amazing. Paragraph G. Shnei kitzvos elu nikarim gam matzam shel bnei Yisrael b'tkufas hagalus. So the Rebbe says, these two dynamics of a name, the power of a name, can be seen when the Jews were in exile. Hagalus, hi matzav shebo ha'elokus shebo olam ne'elemes v'nisteres. U'b'matzav zeh, gam ha'neshama ha'yehudis u'b'kocho seha, inam nikarim ve'inam mashpim b'godoy. So this is amazing. The Rebbe says, what is galus? What is diaspora? He says, galus is when the presence of God is obscured. The presence of God is hidden. The Ribon Shel Olam is not as apparent. That's what galus is. We often define galus as the state of being when we are dispersed throughout the world. We're not concentrated in Eretz Yisrael. That's true. But the real essence of galus is that the Shekhinah, the divine presence, is not as tangibly apparent. It's somewhat hidden. It's somewhat obscured. It can't be seen as easily. And when that happens, when the Shekhinah is hidden, so what happens? The Neshama is also more dormant. Because remember again, as the Baal HaTanya writes, right? As the Baal HaTanya writes, the Neshama is a chilek eloka mima'al mamish. The Neshama is a spark of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When the Ribono Shel Olam's presence is strong in the world, the Neshama is strong in the world. When the Ribono Shel Olam is somewhat obscured or hidden, the Neshama at times could also be obscured or hidden. So watch this, paragraph H. Yachad im zos, etzem nishmaso shel Yehudi, darga amuko yosem ikochosav hanikarim bahagiluyim, odenu b'malot tokfa gam b'petukufas hagalos. Also listen to this. But the power of the Jew is that even when I look dormant, and even when my holiness and my greatness seems to be hidden or obscured, and I don't really look like anything all that great, that's only on the outside. But in the inside, if you could see the neshama I have, if you could see the ruchnius that is pulsating through my body, if you could see the reservoir of spiritual waters that course through my heart, uncontainable, immeasurable, and indescribable. See, even when on the outside, things look dormant in the Jew, on the inside, the neshama is always on fire. On both sides. Remember again, the parallelism works both ways. The same thing is true about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You see, in Golos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears obscured. In Golos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears hidden. But the operative word is appears. Right? Beneath the surface, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is just as active. Beneath the surface, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is just as present. So you see this incredible, like almost like symbiotic relationship. Where there is geula, the Shekhinah is strong and apparent, the Neshama is strong and apparent. Where there is galus, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is obscured, the Neshama is obscured. But just like in galus, the Shekhinah may look hidden, but in reality is right there in full vibrancy beneath the surface, the Neshama is the same as well. Even in galus, the Jew might look unholy. The Jew might look tarnished. The Jew might look more like a beast of burden than a human being. But that's only on the surface. Go beneath the surface, and the holiness, the spirituality is pulsating throughout the neshama of the Jew. So the Rebbe goes on, he says, furthermore, v'yiseir mizu, dafka bizman hagolos, kasher yeshnam kashim minisyonos, misorer koach mesiras nefesh, hanovea me'etzem haneshama. So we'll say, this is actually even amazing. The Rebbe actually takes this a step further, and he explains that sometimes it is dafka during times of galus, where the Jew becomes even stronger. How can the Jew become stronger during galus than during geula? How can you become stronger during times of diaspora and dispersion than during times of redemption? I both say one simple idea. Because when you're in galus, you have to work harder. And when you have to work harder, you reap greater benefits from your avoda. I will say this is the incredible idea. So the Rebbe says, not only is it true that in Golos, even when the Jew looks dormant on the outside, he's pulsating with vibrant spirituality on the inside. Not only that, but this is incredible. Sometimes in Golos, you could become even greater than in Geula. Because in Golos, you have to work. In Golos, you have to push yourself. In Golos, it doesn't come easy. You know, I'll say, you know what the Gemara says? When Mashiach comes, one of the major changes is, we don't accept converts. Why don't we accept converts? Because if you want to join the team, right, you got to work for it. When Mashiach comes, everybody likes to be part of the winning team. Who doesn't like to be part of the winning team, right? So, of course, I'm going to sign up for the winning team after they win the trophy. Sure, I'm a part of that. Put on the jersey after they win the trophy. It's not how it works in life. It's not how it works in life. When Mashiach comes, spirituality is easier. Spirituality is more apparent. In Golos, you have to work for it. So we'll say the incredible part is that's why the Rebbe says, in Golos, we have the ability to reach levels that we won't have in Gula. We'll say, understand how incredible this is. This, by the way, I feel, in general, is a lesson in life that is very countercultural, because today, it seems that the mindset often is that everything is supposed to be easy. And if it's not easy, then there's something wrong with the process. We've got to fix the process. But I'm not such an old person, but the truth is, it's a flawed fundamental ideology. Greatness in life only comes from hard work. Only comes from hard work. And in fact, when things are easy, generally there's no greatness in that. Greatness comes as a result of the struggle. Therefore, says Rebbe something amazing. In Golos, you see how it almost does like a 180. He says, in Golos, just like the Shekhinah is obscured, so the greatness of the Jew, at least externally, is obscured also. But the good news is, beneath the surface, that spiritual vibrancy is still there. I might even be aware of it, but it's there. And then the Rebbe says, but, if you push yourself to be great, even in Golos, and I was like, Golos means when life is not good, when things are difficult, then you have the ability to become even greater in Golos than you ever will have to be, than you ever can become in a state of Gula. Because the greatness that is actualized in a state of stress and struggle is always greater and more intense than greatness which is actualized in times of tranquility. What does this have to do with Shmos? So watch this. He goes on, paragraph I. V'lachin, michuna matzav zeh shmos b'nei Yisrael. We'll say, now we understand. So we'll say, the parasha that talks about Egyptian servitude begins with what? Ve'ele shmos b'nei Yisrael. These are the names. Remember again, we'll say, a name has two aspects. Right? The first aspect of the name, external identifying marker, means really absolutely nothing about my deeper persona. Second idea of a name is that what? It represents the totality of my holiness. Even though that holiness sometimes can't be seen on the outside, it's there. And therefore the Torah HaKadosh, when it introduces the section, ultimately again, of Shibud, of servitude, begins, Eile Shmos B'nei Yisrael. When you look at the klal of this week's parsha, Mitzad Echad, Bizman HaGalos, Hamahus HaYehudis, Hine elemes vinistra ve'enoni keres begaloi, kishim shishmo shel adam mastir oso, ve'eno megala alav davar, umitzad sheni, dafka bizman hagalos poletes pulas ha-shasam shabbos. Listen to this. So the Torah begins, Eile Shmos. If you look at Klal Yisrael, what you're going to see throughout this parasha of Osai are two names, right? Or the both identities of the name. When you look at the Klal throughout this week's parasha of Osai, what do they look like? You look at the Jewish people throughout Parsha Shmos, Va'ira, Bo, let's be honest, even B'Shalach, Yisro, Mishpatim, Truma, Tetzavna, Kisisa, Vayakel, Pekude, Vayikra. What do you see? What do you see? Let's say, we don't exactly put our best foot forward in the biblical narrative, right? Meaning, when you look at these people, you say, like, okay, it's a bunch of Ruvain, Yehudas, Shimon, Levi, Yisachar, Zvulun, Dan, Naphtali. They're just regular people. They're just regular names. And there's a whole bunch of them, but there's nothing extraordinary about them. These are just a group of ordinary people. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, yes, when you look at them, they will look ordinary. When you say their names, they sound ordinary. But that's only one aspect of the name. The other aspect of the name is that it captures the totality of my inner personalistic kedusha. It captures the totality of the greatness I possess that has yet to be actualized. Those are the two identities within Klal Yisrael in Shmos. Ve'ela Shmos b'nei Yisrael. Not Ve'ela Shem b'nei Yaakov. Shmos. These are the names. Because every single Jew has two names. Every single one of us has two names. We have the name of just another ordinary guy. The name of just another face in the crowd. The Bob, the Menachem Mendel, the Shmuel, the Reuven, the Shimon, the Yisachar, whatever your name is. The name of the regular guy, and a million other people have that same name. And then there's our deeper name. Our deeper name, Rabbi Sai, is the name which represents the totality of who we are, of what we are, the potential we have, the abilities we have, the things that we could accomplish if we just put our mind to it. And sometimes we find ourselves in galus. And when you are in galus, right, often only the first name is seen, the second name is not. Because in galus, often my personal greatness is dimmed and obscured. But Rabbi said, like most things in life, the shaila is, how do you want to define yourself? Each of us has these two names. The ordinary me and the extraordinary me. Ve'ela shmos b'nei Yisrael haboim mitzrayimah. These are the names of our ancestors. These are our names as well. The choice we make in life, Rabbi Sai, is what? How we choose to define ourselves. Do we want to define ourselves by the first shame, the ordinary guy who's just like everyone else, a face in the crowd? Or do I want to define myself by the abilities I have, the kedusha I possess, the destiny that is uniquely mine? Do I want to define myself by the ordinary, or do I want to ultimately define myself by the extraordinary? Shkoyach.
Beautiful.
He goes on, you can see afterwards, he goes on a little bit weiter, but you can see. Incredible piece, no? Yes, Barrett.
In Yiddish, quite most people name their sons or daughters after their grandparents. And you